Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, today with Dennis Goldford, professor of political science and department chair at Drake University in Des Moines. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Ben.
Great to have you on board. Perhaps you heard our promotional spot. Valerie Hennings was to join us from Morningside College in Sioux City for the reason, of course, that we'll be talking about Steve King in the 4th District, and that is in the 4th District, of course, in Sioux City. Valerie couldn't join us today, and she will be joining us another time instead. And on short order, we're very grateful that Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, is joining us in our Iowa City studio. Tim, thank you for coming in.
You bet.
We have plenty to get to, as is the case during the Trump era, has been the case. There has been a relentless onslaught of news from different fronts. We want to ask you this hour, especially if you are in the 4th District. We heard, of course, that the House Republicans acting against one of their own, so to speak, questioning whether Steve King, who questioned whether white supremacy was an offensive term in a New York Times article last week. He was removed from committee assignments by his own party. Yesterday, a House resolution of disapproval, almost unanimous. I think the one vote against was by a Democrat who said it didn't go far enough. So what do you think, listeners in our 4th congressional district? Do you agree? Has your support of Steve King changed? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio as well, if you'd like to weigh in on that. Once again, that telephone number, 1-866-780-9100. Let's start off with some state politics quickly. The 2019 Iowa legislative session convened this week. Yesterday, in her second condition of the state speech, Governor Kim Reynolds called for a number of things, called for fulfilling promises that lawmakers made last year in their passage of the Future Ready Iowa Workforce Development Plan. This is to look after, to make sure that we have enough skilled workers in the Iowa workforce in the coming years. Also plans to increase K-12 and higher education spending, pay for workforce development, as I mentioned. Also health care initiatives, including creating a children's mental health care system and amending the Iowa Constitution to restore felons' voting rights and protect victims' rights. Let's here are a couple of clips from that condition of the state address yesterday. She spent much of her speech talking about the needs of rural communities in Iowa based on what she saw as what she campaigned on last in the state last fall.
From river to river and border to border, Iowa is speckled with vibrant communities, each with its own character and story to tell. Every 10, 15, or 20 miles, there's another town, another school brimming with pride, and another main street filled with excitement and hope. These unique communities motivate thousands to ride their bikes from the Missouri to the Mississippi each year. They're what makes Iowa, gives Iowa its character. Unfortunately, in some places, that character is fading, and we cannot let that happen. Our communities and main streets tell a story to the outside world. So my question to each of you is this: how do we want our story to read? That we've given up, or that we're full of hope for the future? That we're tired or full of energy? That we've lost our vision, or we're innovative and creative? That we're fading or growing?
Governor Reynolds proposed a $20 million over 2 years for broadband infrastructure, doubling the rural workforce, housing tax credit to $10 million. Dennis, quite an emphasis on rural Iowa. Does that surprise you?
Not at all. Governor Reynolds and her advisors surely know who got her elected in this past particular midterm race we had in November of this past year. And that has been a problem, the thinning out of population in rural Iowa. Recall before 1990, we had 6 congressional districts. 1990, we went down to 5. We held that in 2000. And then with the 2010 census, we went and reapportionment, we went down to 4 districts. And that's because of the thinning out of population. Around 1985, the Des Moines metro area population was about 250,000. And now it's something like, I believe, 680,000. So that's a huge increase. Mm-hmm. But the population of Iowa as a whole has just crept along very slowly. It hasn't declined, but relative to the rest of the country, it's not moved much at all. And we've seen that particularly in the rural areas. So she clearly understands rural Iowa as her primary constituency and as an area that desperately needs state help to remain a vital place to live and work.
Also in her condition of the state address yesterday, Governor Reynolds called for a constitutional amendment to automatically restore felon voting rights after their release from prison.
Our Constitution takes away the voting rights of anyone convicted of a felony forever. Only 2 other state constitutions have a similar provision. And last November, the people of Florida voted to remove their ban. Through the power of clemency, the governor can restore those rights. And I've done that 88 times since taking office. But I don't believe that voting rights should be forever stripped, and I don't believe restoration should be in the hands of a single person. After the election, and Iowa stopped me, and Iowan stopped me at my grandson's basketball game, I had restored his rights, and he wanted to tell me in person how much that meant to him. How when he stepped into the voting booth, he felt a dignity that had been missing even after leaving prison. I don't think this man and others like him who have completed their sentences should have to wait for my say or any future governor's say before they get that dignity back.
Governor Kim Reynolds yesterday calling for a constitutional amendment to automatically restore felon voting rights in Iowa after release from prison. Tim Hagel, I believe you've in the past had some involvement in this issue, haven't you?
I did. The couple of years that I worked at the Department of Justice, a good portion of that time I spent in the Office for Victims of Crime. And this was a big issue for them. And I happened to be there at the time when Governor Vilsack at the time issued his executive order to automatically restore the voting rights. And a lot of people in the office that I worked in were not happy about that. And part of the reason for that is that when most people hear the word sentence, they're thinking of jail time only. But a lot of times the sentence of criminals, people convicted of crimes, involves not just the potentially jail time, but also restitution, meaning paying money to the victims, paying court costs, things of that nature. Now, the counterargument to that is that, well, that's, as some people, I don't see it this way, but some people argue, well, it's a tax, and you can't have basically a poll tax, and they sort of characterize it that way and figure, well, if you're out of jail, then it must be time for you to be able to have your rights restored. And so that's kind of the back and forth on that particular issue. But another thing that's concerning, some people are concerned that it's going to take a long time to make it a constitutional amendment to do this. I think the projection was something like 2022, something along those lines. But that may be a better way to do it, where you have not only members of the state legislature vote on it twice, but then also allow the people to weigh in, that a lot of times people are unhappy when this is done, either, as Governor Reynolds said, by one person, whether it's the governor or somebody else, or by judicial fiat.
Tim Hagel is with us, as well as Dennis Goldford. It's Politics Wednesday here on River to River. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Let's move to the national news made by Congressman Steve King, the Republican of Iowa's 4th District. Has a long history of remarks that often offend, controversial, inflammatory. Many words have been used in many articles and many radio reports along those lines to describe remarks going back years. Well, the Republicans in the House have decided they've had enough after King asked the New York Times when phrases like white supremacy and white nationalism became offensive. This week, Congressman King removed from committee assignments by his own party. I'll just list a few of the actions here. A top Democrat, Liz Cheney, calling on him to resign. Later yesterday, the House voting 424-1. And that one dissension was because it didn't go far enough, according to the Democrat who put in that nay. A resolution of disapproval offered there that cites King's comments and rejects the ideologies that fuel white supremacy and white nationalism. Now, here is Steve King responding on the House floor yesterday to that resolution, disapproving of his comments in the recent interview he used using the term white supremacist.
I regret the heartburn that has poured forth upon this Congress and this country, and especially in my state and in my congressional district. But the people who know me know I wouldn't have to even make this statement because they do know me. They know my life. They know my history. They know that I have lived in the same place since 1978. There's nothing about my family or my history or my neighborhood or that would suggest that these false allegations could be supported by any activity whatsoever. I reject that ideology. I defend American civilization, which is an essential component of Western civilization.
Okay, House Republican Conference Chair, I mentioned Liz Cheney joined in the criticism of Steve King. She's third in command for the GOP House leadership. Here's what she had to say.
I agree with Leader McConnell, actually. I think he should find another line of work. I think that we've been very clear. I think it was a very significant and serious step to remove him from committees. And I think that you've seen now repeated, this wasn't the first time, but his language questioning whether or not the notion of white supremacy is offensive is absolutely abhorrent. It's racist. We do not support it or agree with it. And as I said, I think he should find another line of work.
Okay. After this outpour of outrage, I guess you'd say, from the U.S. House, the Republicans, join us with your thoughts, especially if you live in Iowa's 4th District. Do you agree? Has your support of Steve King changed? 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, as Terry did. Terry says he should resign. Dennis Goldford, wow, this blew up quickly after so many years of, I guess we could describe as similar comments, right?
That's right. This is not something that's out of the blue. I mean, Congressman King has always struck me, particularly when I've watched his campaign ads, which he tends to run only in the last week or two prior to an election because it has been such a safe seat. He's always struck me as someone who's quite genial and quite pleasant, who happens to say very toxic and inflammatory things. But I think the key thing that happened was that Republicans lost 40 seats in November, particularly in suburban areas, and of course some urban areas as well, wherever they might have had seats. And so this becomes a danger. And it's fitting, I think, as we are in the week or so of the Martin Luther King holiday, to recall that while, you know, American society has a long way to go still in racial relations, there has been some progress. And some of that has been the fact that it's no longer socially, let alone politically, acceptable to be a racist the way it was maybe 50 years ago. And so I think what Republicans now are doing, although people ask, well, why didn't you do it? It might have meant something last fall. What they're doing is attempting to safeguard their reputation. Republicans, mainstream Republicans, do not want to be known as a racist political party. And so they're attempting to distance themselves from Congressman King, even as their critics say, you know, where were you when we needed you?
Mm-hmm. We have to say Steve King voted for this resolution, as I mentioned, in brief remarks on the floor. He reiterated that he was taken out of context, he says, and he does not espouse racist views. Nevertheless, an editorial yesterday, to add to the details on the outrage, called on King to resign. The Des Moines Register editorial, here's quoting from that editorial, Congressman Steve King should resign. He has lost even the potential to effectively represent his Iowa constituents because of his abhorrent comments about white nationalism and white supremacy. Des Moines, but also in the 4th District, we have newspaper editorials turning against Steve King. Your thoughts, Tim Hagel.
Well, as far as the Des Moines Register editorial, I can joke to someone that that might actually help King if Des Moines Register comes out against him. It's sometimes the Register is not well liked among certain Republicans. On the other hand, the Sioux City Journal also came out and basically was
right,
suggesting that King was not in a good position, to put it mildly. King has long suggested the notion of, well, I was taken out of context. And I think in some instances you could say, okay, well, maybe if you're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But the problem is that at a certain point, that excuse or that reason, justification, wears thin. And as I was telling someone the other day, yesterday, that I think that we've gotten to the point where this is the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, I think the situation that Dennis has pointed out in terms of some of the politics of it is undoubtedly part of the equation. But some Republican leaders were maybe willing to say, okay, you know, we distance ourselves from what he has to say, but we're not going to publicly rebuke him at this point. But it seems that King never really got the message in any way that was sufficient for him to change his use of language. And it finally got to the point where they had to do something. And again, it could be because of a variety of things, but certainly looking forward, that the Republican Party does not want to be associated with this kind of language or someone who uses that kind of language, and King is now going to pay the price.
I would add to that. I agree with Tim, but I think I would add to that the fact that obviously Congressman King did not get into the House of Representatives on his own. He was elected by people in the 4th District. And it seems to me that there would be three types of voters in the 4th District. One type, of course, would be those who oppose him and have always opposed him. So they've always been anti-King. But there are two other types of voters, I think, in the 4th District, and maybe we'll hear from some. First would be those who actually, and I hope it's not a large group, actually agree with the kinds of comments that Congressman King makes. But more interesting to me would be the other type of voters who say, they're willing to say, oh, he was misquoted, taken out of context, or they may say that, well, whatever good old Steve says, he's done good things for the district. One of the criticisms of Congressman King, accurate or not, that depends upon the people of the 4th to make that decision, has been that he has not done much of anything. He's not compiled much of a legislative record. So I guess my question would be, or I'd be interested in finding out, those who support him despite his comments in the past, or have supported him despite his comments in the past, because they believe he's done good things for the district, what are those things they believe he has done for the district?
Okay, there's a shout out to our listeners in the 4th District. Let me give our telephone number, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tim Hagel.
Let me follow up on what Dennis was just saying. I happened to be in a discussion with a bunch of Republicans a couple of days ago, and the discussion on Steve King and what he had said. And actually, only two of those types of voters were participating. Again, these were all Republicans. One group wanted him to resign immediately, and another group was of the fine, saying, well, we don't like what he says, but we thought he did good things. And I was thinking exactly what Dennis was suggesting, saying, okay, well, what are the things that he did? Because mm-hmm. that's usually a criticism of him come election time by whoever his opponent happens to be, is saying, well, look, you know, what legislation has he passed? What has he done? And, you know, he's probably done things in terms of constituent services and things along those lines, but it tends to be fairly low key, apparently.
Okay. Join our discussion. Have you supported Steve King in the past? Our analysts are saying, why do you support him in terms of congressional achievements? 1-866-780-9100. Jason is with us from Wall Lake, just south of Sac City, a little north of Carroll and a little east of Sioux City, definitely squarely in the 4th District. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi. What are your thoughts on the Steve King controversy, the latest one?
And it's actually funny because I'll add that I actually grew up in Chiron. That's where I'm originally from.
And this is Steve King's
right
hometown.
There.
Yes.
My thought on this is, Steve King this year had a primary challenger with all the things that he said in the past, and he still won that primary by 75%. So we have to ask ourselves as a district, like, is this what we have? Is this what we are? Is this who we are as a district?
And you live in the 4th District. What is your answer to your own question?
I do think that there is quite a bit of racism. Here, I don't think it's so overt as his, but I do see. I lived in Ames for a while, and then I moved back here after a time, and I just see much more of it in this area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jason in Wall Lake from the 4th District, in a conversation I had a while ago with the Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial writer of the Storm Lake Times, definitely a blue patch in the red district, Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times, Pulitzer Prize-winning. I asked him this very question, what is the appeal of Steve King? And he said, well, it's sort of flipping the bird to the establishment. That's what Steve King does, and he likes that, which leads me, Dennis, to this other question. You know, how will Steve King proceed from here? Because when the establishment goes against him, even if it's in his own party, he can use that to his advantage, can't he?
Well, to some extent, I mean, that's a very Trumpian kind of approach because, I said for quite a while during 15 and 16 that candidate Trump represented the segment of the electorate that was fed up with politics and politicians as usual. And his supporters basically wanted to send a message to Washington that we're sick of all this nonsense. And in many ways, I think Steve King was sort of Donald Trump before Donald Trump became Donald Trump in that regard. But I think that the way, at least in what he said that was printed yesterday, was very interesting about how he's going to continue to represent his constituents or his district, however he put it, for at least the next 2 years. So he didn't say, there was a comment somewhere about if they think I'm resigning, they're wrong. But he referred to at least the next 2 years, which doesn't say he's not going to run for reelection. But all of a sudden, he put a calendar in play. So that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So the GOP, strategically, the GOP viewing Iowa's 4th district, King, in this last election in November, won it by a mere 3%. I say that because Donald Trump won by 27%, and what Steve King has always won in by double digits, hasn't he, Tim Hagel?
All except when he was running against Christy Vilsack.
Mm-hmm. So a mere 3%. So this is a shrewd strategic move by the GOP. Also, we have Republican Randy Feenstra announcing his bid to unseat Steve King in 2020. And his direction, he is, would you call him, Tim Hagel, Trumpian?
I don't know so much about Trumpian. He's certainly considered, from what I understand, as a solid conservative and somebody that maybe can do a better job of working against King in the primary. As the caller indicated, that the last primary and the one before that, actually, too, that King won handily. And I think that maybe they were different and maybe we've reached a different point where now people are becoming more aware that this is a problem, especially when Republican leadership is distancing themselves. And, of course, at the U.S. House, they've stripped him of committee assignments, including his being a member of the Agriculture Committee, which somebody told me is the first time in over 100 years that we haven't had an Iowan on the Agriculture Committee. And so I think those are things that can be used in a primary against Steve King. We'll have to see if King actually even decides to run again.
We'll be back and continue our discussion about Republican Steve King, the controversy that has garnered national headlines. He's removed from committee assignments by his own party in the House. This after asking the New York Times when phrases like white supremacy and white nationalism became offensive. A resolution of disapproval passed yesterday nearly unanimously. Join our conversation, especially if you're in the 4th District. Has your support for Steve King changed? What questions do you have about this controversy? 1-866-780-9100. Dennis Goldford, Tim Hagel, and Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's a Politics Wednesday with Dennis Goldford of Drake University, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, providing analysis. We have so many topics to get to. Of course, the controversy surrounding Steve King, the latest one surrounding his inflammatory remarks, asking when phrases like white supremacy and white nationalism became offensive in a New York Times article last week. He was removed from committee assignments by his own party. A resolution of disapproval passed yesterday nearly unanimously, with the exception of one vote, 424-1 in the U.S. House, asking you to weigh in, especially if you're from the 4th District. 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. JPG from Northwest Iowa, I assume. If it's Northwest Iowa, it's going to be the 4th District, tweets, what took them so long? He has been saying this stuff for years. Let's go to the 4th District. Humboldt is just south of Algona, a little north of Fort Dodge. JJ is listening in Humboldt. Hi, JJ.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's your reaction?
I voted against Steve King last two or three elections, and I was happy to see that we flipped a couple seats in the urban areas. And I just wondered if this is an issue with redistricting or gerrymandering, because I believe King won with very little effort. I just wanted to hear your comments on that. Mm-hmm.
You said, before we do get the comments from our analysts, you said you voted against him in the last three elections. There have been many more in Steve King's past, in the fifth, previously, now the fourth. Did you at one time vote for Steve King?
No, I've just made it a point to vote against him the last few times. So.
Okay. JJ's question, gerrymandering was the question there, Tim Hagel?
Yeah, gerrymandering is certainly a topic that gets discussed in a lot of other places, but Iowa's model is very nonpartisan. It sort of just happens that the 4th District, because it is less populous and the rural areas tend to be more Republican, that they are kind of grouped together, and that makes the 4th District, as was the old 5th District, a very safe seat for Republicans. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the urban areas where you have a higher concentration of Democrats that the other districts have. And we'll be okay in the 2020 census, but along about the next one, we'll very likely, because of our much slower growth, very likely lose another seat.
Go down to even three.
It's I think it's possible.
In our heyday, so
it
to
was
speak.
Double digits.
We had 10 or 11 districts, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Interesting. Jim is in the 4th District. Jim calling from whereabouts in the 4th District, may I ask, Jim?
Spencer, Iowa.
Spencer, what's your view?
Well, I think there's a category that you didn't list in your analysis of the voters that, you know, King can count on, and that is the knee-jerk, just, you know, any and all Republican category. I think, you know, recently that was eliminated. You couldn't just vote straight ticket, and I know that had an impact on the outcome. But I would also say that, you know, putting federal marshals in the polling places in Storm Lake must have had an effect on the outcome, and it would have only taken 1.55% to have beat him. And it mm-hmm. makes me wonder if that wasn't a factor.
Interesting, Jim. I don't know many details about federal marshals at the polling places, but I do know Storm Lake, an incredibly diverse community in western Iowa. Dennis, what about that addition? You were asking for categories of or listing categories of people who supported Steve King and why.
Well, you know, there are members of both parties who say that no matter how bad or how flawed the candidate of my party might be, it's still much better or not as bad as the candidate of the other party. I mean, we had two very unpopular presidential nominees in 2016, and certainly in a couple of cases, or several cases, I should say, you know, I read of people who say, well, you know, I'm not thrilled with Donald Trump, but he's still better than Hillary Clinton, or I'm not thrilled with Hillary Clinton, but she's still better than Donald Trump. You always have that. But and I in no way intend the following to suggest that Congressman King goes this far. But you might recall, I believe, in the early 1980s, David Duke managed to win a Republican nomination for governor in Louisiana because of low turnout in a primary and a high turnout in the fairly northern, more rural sections of Louisiana. And regular Republicans were horrified because of Duke's past affiliation with the Ku Klux Klan or neo-Nazis or whatever they accused him of. There were bumper stickers at that time that said, hold your nose, vote for the crook. In other words, these were regular Republicans who thought we would rather have a Democratic governor we can merrily attack and criticize for his policies and personal behavior than to have to bear the burden of justifying and constantly asking questions about a candidate with toxic views who nonetheless has our party's name. Mm-hmm. That hadn't come to be – I don't think we've had that extreme a situation here in Iowa, but that's partly what some folks were asking. Were there Republicans who were so Republican that no matter how toxic Congressman King's comments might have appeared to people, they were still going to support him over a Democrat?
Dennis Goldford with us, along with Tim Hagel, our political analysts on This Politics Wednesday. Pat is with us in Humboldt in the 4th District as we discuss the controversy around Steve King that made him be removed by his own party from committee assignments this week. Also, a resolution of disapproval offered by the House for comments he made last week in the New York Times. Pat in Humboldt, join our discussion. Yeah. Thanks for being with us. What do you want to add?
interesting. I would like to add that Steve King is a scapegoat for those who really would like to vote against Trump but don't have the courage to do so. And they're using him as the scapegoat. I also think that the party loyalists, like our last caller, are the ones that are going to have to suffer the pain of watching Steve King in there twirling in the midst. It's the party loyalists that voted for him for 9 times that are to blame for him being in there.
Pat in Humboldt, thank you very much for that call from the 4th District. Mentioning Trump there, Dennis, why is this different than the reaction to the president's comments that offended many, racially tinged remarks? His comments, for instance, from August of 2017 after a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, where he said there were fine people on both sides.
This is what many Trump critics, whether Democratic or not, are raising as an issue. If, in fact, Congressman King's comments are toxic, inflammatory, and cross a line, why don't you say the same thing these folks ask about numerous Republicans? Why don't you say the same thing about the president? And there's been, at least so far from what I've been able to make out, a deafening silence in that regard.
Hmm. Okay. Joe is in Donahue. Donahue in the 4th District as well, Joe?
Yes, I am here.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was born and raised in the 4th District.
Okay.
Which is now the 4th District around Harlan, a little north of Harlan in Shelby County.
Sure.
I now live in Scott County.
All right, sure. I know Harlan, where you grew up. What comment do you want to make about the 4th District?
Well, the comment that I want to make is not one that I really like to make, but I think it's true that there's a lot of latent racism in the state of Iowa. And I hear it, you know, I hear it around in family reunions, and, you know, people say things like, they'll use the N-word, for example, and not think anything of it. Mm. There's just a lot of that out there, and I think that King kind of, in their minds, legitimized this kind of feeling. I think we have, unfortunately, I think we have a long way to go in this state as far as race relations are concerned, because all those rural areas are, if you go into a school, for example, in most of Iowa, you'll find almost entirely white population. I did my work in Davenport, where it's very diverse, but for the state as a whole, it's very white. And okay. I think those feelings of racism are out there, and they're so ingrained that it's going to take a long time and a lot of work to get rid of it.
Okay. Native Iowan Joe, who grew up, says he grew up and was born and raised in the 4th District. Thank you for that perspective. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler joining us from Dayton. So much input on this comment, the Steve King controversy. Tyler, I'll have to ask you to be brief, but we're sure glad you're on the phone.
Something I noticed, I volunteer a lot with the Scholten campaign and doing a lot of canvassing this fall. When I learned on the reason why I think King got a lot of votes, a lot of people didn't know what Steve King said. There was a lot of, a lot of surprised people when you would bring it up and explain to them, you know, these are his comments or show them his comments. And the information, a lot of the elderly voters in this area don't follow social media news. They follow one news source that doesn't cover the issue that we're seeing now on a broader scale.
Okay, so that perhaps our media sources, we're pigeonholing ourselves or siloing ourselves, the point made by Tyler from Dayton. Thank you very much for chiming in, Tyler. Other comments, but we want to move on to a couple of other things before this politics day ends. Confirmation hearings of William Barr to be the next attorney general continuing today. Yesterday, the attorney general nominee said he would permit the special counsel to complete the Russia investigation. He also said he was determined to resist any pressure from President Trump to use law enforcement for political purposes. It seems that Barr's confirmation is virtually assured. Let's hear a little bit from that confirmation hearing yesterday in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. William Barr saying during the hearing that The Attorney General should work to support the special counsel, Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election, and that as Attorney General, he would not be bullied.
Given his public actions to date, I expect that the special counsel is well along in his investigation. At the same time, the president has been steadfast that he was not involved in any collusion with Russian attempts to interfere in the election. I believe it is in the best interest of everyone, the president, Congress, and the American people, that this matter be resolved by allowing the special counsel to complete his work. The country needs a credible resolution to these issues. And if confirmed, I will not permit partisan politics, personal interests, or any other improper consideration to interfere with this or any other investigation. I will follow the special counsel regulations scrupulously and in good faith, and on my watch, Bob will be allowed to finish his work.
Okay, William Barr. The nominee to be the next attorney general. I think before the we got started, Tim Hagel, you said you watched pretty much all the hearings yesterday. What do you take away from the assurances by William Barr, especially concerning the special counsel?
Hopefully, they will convince a few Democrats to not be as concerned about this. Of course, one of the things that Democrats often talk about is a concern that perhaps Trump would fire or have now acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker fire Mueller, and then we would maybe get into the kind of situation that we saw back in the Watergate
right.
days with a number of people getting fired to try to get rid of a special counsel. That's not going to really stop the investigation, even if Mueller gets fired, because there are going to be other people there, and they'll certainly release that information. But it would still constitute maybe not a crisis, but certainly a very difficult time if that were to happen, because you wouldn't have that resolution. You wouldn't have the the type of thing that Barr is talking about there. So he's basically giving those assurances. That's not necessarily going to cause some of the Democrats on the committee or in the Senate in general to vote for him, but certainly there'd be less to worry about if he is in fact confirmed, which it looks like he will be.
Mm-hmm. Based on what we've heard, Dennis Goldford from William Barr and the questioners on that committee, are we likely to end this sort of healing, this listing of the Attorney General's office under Jeff Sessions for sure, and get an even keel?
Well, Mr. Barr certainly sounds, and Tim would know a lot more about this than I do, but he certainly sounds as though he's someone very dedicated to the independence and integrity of the Department of Justice and the Office of the Attorney General. You know, we've got to have some people we rely on to do the right thing, even though we know, of course, that humans make mistakes at times. But, you know, just the thought that Republicans attack the FBI and law enforcement and various things, that's just astounding given the law and order focus of the Republican Party for the last 50 years, going back to the 1968 campaign. But the concern on the part of some Democrats was Mr. Barr's somewhat oblique reference to the possibility of not everything coming out from the Mueller report. Now, I know there are regulations that say that certain kinds of evidence may not be suitable to be aired in public, even though you might be able to tell people the conclusions that you've reached but not talk about the particular evidence. Again, Tim will know more about that than I will. But generally speaking, it's just hard for me to think at this point in somebody's career like that of this particular nominee, why would he want to do this in order to sabotage an investigation and go down in history as the person who sabotaged
right.
the investigation?
Well, and also, is it clear to either of you why Donald Trump picked William Barr, given his statements? He has made it known far and wide that he thinks the Attorney General should be his ally, should show him loyalty, his allegiance over the laws of this country, it seems, at time. Am I characterizing that correctly, Tim Hagel?
You are, and I'm smiling at this, holding back a laugh, because, you know, one of the things that we've seen with President Trump is that he'll often say things in a very aggressive kind of way or provocative kind of way, but then some of his actions don't tend to always follow that. And so there's sort of the theatrical side
of
things. But
he did ask James Comey for his loyalty. He was clearly asking for that support over the laws of the land.
Right, certainly. I think that in this particular instance, given the brouhaha over getting Jeff Sessions fired and what happened when Matt Whitaker became the acting and the, the sort of uproar over that, that Trump needed to find somebody that wouldn't have that kind of, the public wouldn't have that kind of reaction to. And the people that advised him basically advised him that Barr would be that kind of person. And Barr even said himself that initially he was reluctant to do this, but found that, you know, it was his belief in public service, and this was a time, but it was important time to have a steady hand, so to speak, at the helm of the Justice Department. He was willing to take it. And he's in a position in his life, as he said in the hearings yesterday, where, you know, nobody's going to bully me. You know, I'm, if I were 20 years younger or something like that, he said, 45 to 50, that maybe it would be more of a problem because he would have the rest of his career to think about. But he's basically, at this point, semi-retired. He's taking this on as sort of this this challenge at this particular important point in time, and we'll see it through appropriately.
Dennis, your thoughts on why the president picked William Barr and what he may have thought about the testimony yesterday. I mean, to imagine Donald Trump watching it, which he certainly was, and saying, I picked the right guy.
The simple answer is beats me. But I think that you have to remember, the president is not someone who knows much at all, by all accounts, across all party lines, about public policy, and certainly doesn't know much about how the government operates or even how it's staffed. So the key question to me is, you know, who were the last couple of people that whispered in his ear? I didn't know if it was Leonard Leo from the Federalist Society. The, you know, he farmed out his choice of judicial nominees to that particular group and has been very successful with that. But, you know, the question might be, you know, I would be shocked if the president had ever heard of or knew anything at all about William Barr. So the question is, who among his advisors might have recommended him? And the fact that he wrote that memo that seemed to criticize aspects of the Mueller investigation, I think some point last year, that might have been attractive to him. But the president forgets at times that, as opposed to his own company, where he was the ultimate object of loyalty, you know, federal officials, even those in the executive branch, swear an oath to support and defend not the president, but the Constitution.
It speaks to the tumult in our political times that we are in the final 2 minutes of this Politics Wednesday, Tim and Dennis. And we haven't mentioned that our government is partially shut down, now going into its fourth week, the longest shutdown in U.S. history. Federal workers have missed on average more than $5,000 in wages per worker. 800,000 employees currently furloughed, working without or working without pay. It said more than $200 million every workday. Today we're hearing the economic damage from the shutdown, far greater than had been estimated. The White House saying that Trump's economists have doubled the projections of how much growth is being lost each week. I'm looking on the screen, too, in the last few minutes. Nancy Pelosi asking the president to reschedule the State of the Union address or just submit in writing because of the shutdown. I guess security reasons there. Before we go, a quick comment. Tim, you start on the shutdown here. A few seconds to comment on I mean, Nancy Pelosi, a power play there. When is this ending? That's the big question. Any hints?
Well, as far as the on that particular point, we don't know yet. That again, we're starting to get to the point where the effects of this are seriously going to be felt. You know, prior shutdowns, administration, Obama administration say would try to make it felt much faster in terms of how they approached it, whereas Trump's tried to minimize the effects. But at a certain point, he won't be able to do so. And once the public more generally starts to feel it in a variety of ways, that's when there's going to be more pressure on both sides to come to some kind of agreement.
We see polls, a variety of polls showing most Americans blaming Donald Trump for the shutdown. Of course, very partisan when you break it down. Dennis, does this matter to the president? Is who's winning, who's losing going ahead, and when there is no sign of this shutdown ending?
Apparently what matters most to him is what he hears on Fox and Friends and talk radio, because he remember he was willing to come to an agreement to support the bill that was coming out of the Senate, at least for the short term, to say we'll discuss the wall, but we'll fund the government right now, until he got a rather discouraging, if not contemptuous, word from both Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter. They connect with his base. His base is his security blanket. He wraps more tightly around him the deeper in trouble he gets. And so he's boxed himself into a bit of a corner, and I think looking for a way out. out.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, quickly, even though polls show most Americans blame Donald Trump, is there any downside for the Dems, the Democrats, in not negotiating before a government is reopened?
Well, their people are hurting, too. And I think that there will be some pressure on Democrats just to help the people struggling to pay those bills as well.
Okay. Dennis Goldford of Drake University, professor and department chair at Drake University. Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Thank you so much. So much we didn't get to. There's always another Politics Wednesday to look forward to. Dennis Goldford, Tim Hagel, thank you so much.
You bet.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks so much for all the calls and input from our listeners this hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tune in again tomorrow. Hope to see you.